Watching the monkey.
Good morning, everybody. Well, it's good morning where we are anyway on this January the 30th, 2020. And welcome to The Art of Being with the ACT Matrix. I'm one of your co-hosts, Kevin Polk, and somewhere here, there's Phil.
Yeah, over here.
Phil is the other co-host, and today we're going to have Evan Parks as a guest on the podcast. But first, we need a word from our sponsor.
Yes.
And I'll turn that over to Phil.
Here is the obligatory word from our sponsor, which would be us, Kevin and I.
There we go.
We are able to produce this podcast to bring to you through the ACT Matrix certification program, which Kevin and I offer on a regular basis. And the idea is we're trying to build a community of like-minded folks who are into doing generous work like you're about to hear today. And by having collaborative conversations that help the people that we serve get where they want to go. And really, all you have to do to get started is to go to the ACT Matrix Academy and just sign up. Or you can click on the link below if you're watching on YouTube.
Right. It's free to sign up for the training.
It's free to sign up. And then we only charge for the certification, which is how we help to pay the bills.
Right. So the model that we use is we give the mate training away for free all around the world. And then there's a few people who would, for various reasons, like to get certified. And then we charge for that. But we would never charge for the training.
Right.
We want it available to
people
those
to use it
everywhere. So, Evan.
Yes.
We're
good
here.
Morning. Good morning.
And, of course, Phil and I, well, maybe Phil knows what you're here to talk about.
Well, I'm talking from
Grand
Rapids today.
I snuck a peek. Sorry, Evan.
I forgot to sneak a peek. So what are you here for, Evan?
Well, Phil and Kevin, you probably know that I work with people who have chronic pain.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've heard that. That's, yes.
Yes. Yeah, I'm located here in Grand Rapids, Michigan at the Mary Freebed Rehabilitation Hospital.
Okay.
And we have an outpatient clinic that sees many, many people throughout the month and throughout the year, people coming in with chronic pain. And many of these people have been kind of stuck in a place where their pain has really limited their life. And so what I'm interested in talking about is how to help people when they are stuck in a loop. And the loop is, if I move, it hurts. And when they restrict their movement, they end up getting a little bit further into this pain problem. And how ACT and principles from ACT can be really helpful in helping people get out of that loop.
So people go to move, it hurts, so they stop.
Yes.
Okay, got it. I've been there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, most of us
have. Me too. I've experienced that.
Yeah. But you're talking on a chronic nature.
Yeah.
Right. Well, as a matter of fact, in the short term, that's a good strategy.
Yeah,
I mean, you may be hurt. It may be best to stop moving and heal up first, right?
Get a little relief.
So that's a natural thing that your body goes to do.
Yeah.
You're talking the unnatural process of when that's no longer workable.
Right, right. Well, it's helpful to make the distinction between acute pain and chronic pain.
Yes.
Yeah, so with acute pain, our brain is going to be protective. And that protection helps us to limp when we have a sprained ankle. And we need to take some weight off of that, and that will help it in the short term bring about some healing. But in the long term, that strategy actually is not all that helpful.
And there is the rub.
Yes.
The transition from the acute to the long term.
Right.
Right. And so that's what you do.
It is.
Well, great. Tell us about it.
Yeah. Well, Let me just give you a typical person who would be coming in and in that loop. Many of the people that we see here have been in chronic pain for a number of years, up to 20 or more years.
Yeah. Wow.
And not only that, they have been through a gamut of other types of pain rehabilitation, pain clinics, I should say, not necessarily rehabilitation. I think that's a special type of approach that we focus on. A lot of the pain approaches that they have had have focused on pain relief. So they've maybe gone to places where they get a series of injections of steroids or something. Another would be just medication. Another might be an implanted stimulator device. A TENS unit.
A TENS, that's it. That's what they call them, right.
There are also morphine pumps that people get. So they get a continuous drip of opioids. There's also a number of medications that are used are there to mask pain at some level. And so when they come to Mary Freebed, one of the things that they hopefully know up front is that we approach pain management differently than those things that I just listed. And what we're really interested in doing is helping people get moving again, be less reliant on some of the other approaches that they have been using, and get to a point where they're able to function well enough so that they actually never need to come back to see us again. But the condition that many people are in as they come is that they are pretty limited in their mobility. They might be off of work. They might have reduced their hours of work. When they're not working, not moving, they really try to spend most of their time sitting, lying down, in a sense, limiting their activity to limit their discomfort. And that just intuitively seems to make sense to us. And it takes a bit of pain education right at the beginning to plant really a seed of doubt of whether or not that approach that they've been using has really been helpful or not.
Yeah.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, excellent question. So what we begin with is a little overview of the nervous system, and just assuming that whatever we're sharing with people might be brand new information. They probably haven't received much information about their chronic pain from their providers. And doctors have this 10-minute visit usually with patients. You know, they look at some lab results, they write a script, and off the patient goes without really knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, so we spend quite a bit of time just starting with some of the confusion that they have and questions that they have about how their body works, nervous system works. And one of the neat pieces I think that we focus on is a misconception. We have this misconception that the nerve endings that are detecting problems. We have a nerve ending that detects if we've been burned, if we've been, there's tissue damage, if there is mechanical pressure, if there's some chemical invasion, say like from acid, or if there's inflammation. Those are five very specific type of endings of our peripheral nerves that are warning us that something has changed. So the misconception is that we have is that those nerve endings are the source of pain. And so as people learn that the nerve endings are only providing information to the brain that something has changed, and that the brain itself has to analyze that information and determine if there's a threat. And if the brain determines that there's a threat, then the brain will produce an output. And pain itself is the output.
Oh,
yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that misconception begins to open this door that maybe my knee, my ankle, my low back, my neck is not actually the central thing that I need to be focused on in terms of how I plan my recovery.
Yeah. So you're shifting their perspective with this.
Well, yeah, it's pain's not an input, it's an output.
Right. Right.
180 degrees different.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. And so to simply illustrate that, sometimes I'll have a discussion about phantom pain, mm-hmm. phantom limb pain.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit longer talk, but what I'll explain is we don't actually need a limb to have pain in the limb.
Yeah. Most people have heard of phantom pain. Yeah.
Right.
It's after somebody has an amputation.
Right.
And they still experience the pain.
Exactly.
In the limb that was amputated. Right.
Right. Right. And so then along the way, talking about how the brain analyzes pain, another thing that I'll do that gets close to the work that we do with psychology and acceptance and commitment therapy is to look at how does the brain analyze things. And so one of the things that I like to emphasize is our brain is awesome at making links and connections. some of those links and connections just are not useful or helpful. Mm-hmm.
But it does like to make them.
It loves to make them, yep.
Right. So, you know, here's an illustration that I use. It's a visual illustration. I have three dots that are drawn on the back of a notebook that I always have in my hand when I'm talking to a patient. And these three dots are arranged in the general shape of a triangle,
mm-hmm.
you know, each point of a triangle.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And I'll hold that up and I'll say, as you're looking at this, your brain is going to organize that information.
Yep.
And I'll ask, how does it organize that information? What is your brain saying that this is? And everyone, 100% of the people will say, oh, it is a triangle.
Yep.
And I'll ask, well, is it? I just see three dots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And how do you know that is a triangle? And why does your brain do that? And then I'll shift to another example. I'll say, let's say that you're standing at the kitchen sink for about 15 minutes. You're doing dishes. And during that time, you notice a little flare-up of discomfort in whatever part of your body you've got.
Yep.
And at the same time, you're doing the dishes, you're standing, you have this flare-up. You look out the window, and all of a sudden, you see these dark clouds rolling in. And the wind starts to blow. You can tell that it's going to rain. The temperature's probably dropping. And then all of a sudden, your brain makes connections.
Oh, no.
It says,
I can see where this is going.
It says, I know why this pain is here. This pain and discomfort is here right now because, number one, you're standing too long. Number two, the weather is changing.
Yep.
And it really doesn't matter whether or not that's true.
Right.
No.
Nope.
Because once that connection is made, it's made.
It's there.
It's there, there forever. Yes.
Right. All right. So this is where I go with it, which is really giving them an experience, a little bit of this. So let's say that somebody has stiff, uncomfortable, painful knees. Sitting, they're fine. You know, so they're sitting in a chair in my office. They don't have any discomfort sitting.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'll say, well, where is it that you have discomfort? When is it? What's happening? They'll say, oh, you know, my house, it's a two-level house. You know, I have all the laundry downstairs and you know, I have to go up and down, and I just cannot manage stairs with my poor old knees. And I'll say, well, let's do an experiment. Have them close their eyes and then visualize every aspect of going down the stairs. They try to engage all the, you know, four of the five senses.
Yeah.
Can't really include taste.
Yeah. Yeah, paint a picture, right?
Mm-hmm. I'll have them do this visualization going down. Most steps, between floors are about 10 to 12 steps. And literally, I'll have them every single step.
Step by step.
Oh, and what does that look like? You know, what other sensations are there? What do you smell? What do you hear? And the visualization will take a good 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I'll have them open their eyes, and I'll ask, what do you feel? And they'll say, 100% of the time, my knees hurt.
Mm-hmm. Shocked.
Wow, that's interesting.
It is interesting.
How did that happen?
Yeah. Yeah, moving a muscle. How'd you do that?
I'll get the triangle out.
Okay.
And I'll say, well, here are three dots. And one of those dots is the picture in your brain of stairs. The other dot on this triangle is the picture in your brain of you moving. Your brain says, oh, those two things are linked to something else. And that linkage happens whether you want it to or not. And instantly you're going to feel pain.
Right.
Automatic.
Automatic. Because
pain is an output.
Because pain is an output. And neurons that fire together, wire together.
I thought you were going to say stay together.
or hang out together.
They hang out together.
Yeah.
That's right.
Or they flock together. Yeah, we can get all kinds of metaphors in here.
Right, right.
But so, we got it, right.
One of the things that really needs to change is how that linkage is wired together and to bring about some kind of shift in perspective mm-hmm. that helps that brain to say, hey, those things do not need to be linked. So part of that is going to be using the ACT approach. And part of that is going to actually be moving in safe ways that doesn't trigger that pain threshold. Mm. You really need to experience things directly for that brain to say, oh, I'm safe, even though I'm sore. I'm sore, but safe.
Yep.
And so one of the pieces that we want them to understand early on in the program is that pain itself, when it shows up, does not mean that harm is being done. So if harm is not being done, that means that a person can do things without actually doing damage to themselves. And if they're not doing damage to themselves, then that protective mindset that we have maybe should be challenged a little bit. And that's where in our team approach, what we have here at Mary Freebed is we have occupational therapists and physical therapists and medical staff that are really excellent at tailoring safe ways for people to begin that process of stretching, strengthening, endurance training, and moving in everyday activities mm-hmm. so that that level of threat in the brain, that pain threshold, doesn't get triggered.
Yeah.
And that helps reinforce that new way of thinking that, well, maybe pain doesn't need to equal harm. Mm. Maybe I can be sore while I walk, but my soreness actually means that I'm safe. So another thing that taps in, I think, nicely to looking at ACT and how ACT is helpful in understanding these brain processes is that the brain comes up with rules. Pain shows up. The brain makes this prediction, how long pain is going to last. That prediction, by the way, is never, based on fact. It's like, just one of the
our things. Minds are so good at predicting things, right, yep. Evan?
It's just predicting. It says, hey, I'm going to have 12 hours worth of pain today. Well, why is it? I always ask this.
Yeah.
Why is it the brain never predicts 2 minutes? It never does. It always predicts the dark. I'm going to be out all day tomorrow because I did this one thing today. Yeah. Why? But the brain will predict that. And then with that prediction comes a set of rules where the brain says, this is what you can't do, and this is what you can do. And, I'll run through a very typical sequence that people struggle with. They'll wake up in the morning, early morning, and they're laying in bed just for a minute or two before they get out of bed. And they'll do this little inventory. And they're, I'm stiff over here. I got a, achiness already in that part of my body. I got, I just had a shooting pain down my leg.
They go searching for the pain first thing, right?
Yeah. Right. And then, within a fraction of a second, the brain does this analysis. And with that analysis is a prediction. And the prediction is, you're going to have 8 hours, 12 hours worth of pain today. Then the brain kicks into its rulemaking. It says, the first thing you're going to have to do is you're going to take a warm shower. But that warm shower is only going to take 2% off of this pain because this pain is 12 hours. And it's really not going to be enough for you. So right after breakfast, you're going to have to take some over-the-counter medication. But that over-the-counter is not going to be enough for this 12 hours worth of pain. So around 10 a.m., you're going to have to take prescribed medicine. And when that prescribed medicine starts to kick in, if it's really going to be helpful, you better lay down. You better sit down. And, if you can fall asleep for 10, 15 minutes around 1 o'clock, that might help. But if you don't, you're pretty much going to be miserable for the rest of the afternoon. And by 3, you're going to have to take another prescribed medicine. By that time, you're going to be in such a brain fog from your medication and from the pain that you're going to be useless. So you might as well cancel most of your plans now.
So you say this to people?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. And people laugh because... Oh, yeah. That is their dialogue.
Yeah. You're in my head. You're in my head.
Exactly what I hear. Yep. So what I ask them, which is a classic ACT approach, I will say, is that useful to you? And they've never thought about that. Mm-hmm. The brain naturally is protective. It's going to tell everyone with pain to go into a room, make it dark, stay there, and don't come out.
Yeah.
That is the universal prescription for pain management around the world. Yeah. So we have to ask ourselves, is that functional? Does that get me where I want to go? And so to introduce a little bit of what we call an ACT creative hopelessness, I'll say, it hasn't really gotten you any further, number one. Number two, what does it cost you? And it generally has cost people quite a bit, that approach. But what I really emphasize, which they don't realize, is that the cost is that protective nature of the brain will interfere with healing.
Okay.
So we cannot heal when we stop moving. And that is... something that is really easy to demonstrate with an absolutely healthy person. You take an absolutely healthy person, and NASA has been doing this to try to understand space travel, right? They want to get people to go from here to there, Mars, for example, put them to sleep. Well, what happens when the body is in a prone position for all it has to be is 3 days?
Yeah.
Perfectly healthy.
Exactly.
Yep.
It's people in comas. They have the studies.
Right. They're going to be that perfectly healthy person will have a loss of bone density, muscle atrophy, the muscles shrink. And what is really interesting is that the veins which return blood to the heart become more elastic. Mm. Then people begin to be dizzy. They begin to lose balance. They begin to feel unstable, which leads them, of course, to do less.
Do less, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so everything that moves us toward health has to do with stretching, strengthening,
right,
endurance training,
maintaining the muscles. Yeah.
Maintaining the muscles,
and adapting, right?
But yeah. Also our cardiovascular system, because that heart has to pump,
yeah,
and it has to be strong enough. But the arteries and the veins have to be strong enough, you know, to be, you know, providing that circulation. You know, so when a person really begins to see that movement is their friend and not their enemy, then a really neat change, you know, begins to take place. So another piece that is interesting to work with is the fear that people have of movement. And as you know, fear is a powerful monster when it shows up in a person's life. And people are coming into a pain program like ours with a lot of reason to have fear, because they have had pain associated with movement again.
Yeah.
And there's no point in starting with, you shouldn't be afraid.
No.
No.
And they probably have heard that too.
Yeah. You know, well-meaning healthcare professionals, you know, will say, well, you shouldn't think that.
Yep. Just don't have that thought.
Which means you think that.
Right. Right. Yeah. It works so well.
Yeah. Well, folks, we're quite serious. Yeah. That's many, many studies have shown, and you know it for yourself. If we tell you to don't think about pink elephants, you're instantly thinking about pink elephants. So everything, anything, don't think about pain, don't think about fear, whatever it is, boom, you just triggered it. So Evan takes a different approach.
Yeah. And the approach that, you know, this is at a point, Kevin and Phil, that I would start using the matrix.
Here comes the matrix. Okay.
Rolling it out now.
Yeah. Yeah. So the matrix, as you know, is a very useful tool to increase a person's awareness of all this stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm. I like stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. One of our favorite words is stuff.
Yeah. It's just stuff.
Yep.
Not either good or bad.
Nope. It's just stuff.
It's just stuff. And, you know, so a lot of people are assuming that me as a psychologist talking with them, I'm really going to get at the long history and struggle and dynamics of their fear. And they're kind of surprised that the first thing that I really want to know about is what's important.
Yeah. Bingo.
Bingo, yes.
And
they are surprised at that, yeah. But it's a valuable place to start.
It is.
Workable place to start.
It is. It's that first piece of, we're going to be looking at this in a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It's 9 o'clock. That's what that chime.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yep. Okay. So one of the things that is a struggle for people who have had chronic pain for 10, 15, 20 years, is that whole sense of living a life focused on what's important to them is now very remote.
Yes.
And very distant. And it is a real struggle.
Oh, by the way, he's talking about the lower right-hand part of the matrix. That's where we generally.
I'll just basically put that.
Phil's holding it up, but two vertical line, two lines. One's vertical, one's horizontal. The one has sense at the top, mind at the bottom. The other one has toward to the right, away to the left. And we start it with who and what's important to you in the lower right-hand quadrant. And so then you can jot things in there. Who's important, you know, family members and such. And then what, which is, well, whatever a what is. But there's a lot of what's in the world. By the way, pets are always who's.
Okay.
Right. I do. It's just people, you'll say, you know, who's important to you? And they'll say, my dog. So, and we're cool with that. I'll often say pets are people too. But anyways, that's what he's talking about. Yeah. So continue. I just, every once in a while we're on a podcast, Evan. And so I have to bring people up visually up to speed with the matrix.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so important for people to get the big picture. And so with people who have struggled with chronic pain, that part of their life has not been tapped into in a while.
The who and what's important part.
Yeah, the who and what important part.
I'm pondering that, right.
Right. And so sometimes I'll have to approach that area when I'll say, hey, you know, who's important to you, what's important to you? And they struggle. And I'll reframe the question. I'll ask, tell me, what's the greatest source of unhappiness in your life right now? And they'll say, hey, I can't play with my grandkids.
There you go.
There you go. Right.
And what did they just tell me?
They just gave you the lower right-hand quadrant. Grandkids are important.
Really, really important to me.
And folks, remember that. Oftentimes you will hear who and what's important by statements like, it's too bad that I can't do X. Well, whatever X is important. That's, we have, all of us, and even in your own life, if you hear yourself saying that, you're reminding yourself that X is important to you.
Yeah. So our source of suffering is really our source of values.
Yes. Very much so.
Very, yeah. So as they begin to look at that, not immediately, but for many people, it gets them asking questions of themselves that they haven't asked in a while. Yeah. When am I ever going to get around to getting back to this part of my life? How long do I want to stay away from that? And a really good question is, I wonder what I need to do to get back to having that part of my life, be, connected to again. Mm-hmm. So I link that discussion on values and who's important and what's important to their fear. Because the things that interfere with us moving forward are showing up on the lower left-hand quadrant of the matrix. And that's the yucky stuff. And a typical statement that I'll make is, when pain shows up, because they'll always identify pain as one of those things that prevents them from being with their grandkids. That prevents them from being able to, contribute to the community or make money for their family. So they always identify pain, but they don't always identify all the other things that show up with pain. Yeah. And so I'll just make a simple statement. I'll say, pain never shows up alone. Right. Pain always shows up with friends. The friends are discouragement, frustration, anger, self-judgment,
resentment,
right. Bitterness sometimes.
Shame. Did you get shame?
I think shame. Oh, yeah. Shame. And listed in that, they'll get to it eventually, is fear. One of the fears that people have is this is never going to change. I'm only going to get worse. All I can see ahead of me are just more surgeries. And, you know, so that really is powerful when that is the activity that's going on inside of a person's mind. And this is now when I kind of draw their attention to the circle that's in the middle of the matrix, which
Okay, Phil's going to hold it up again for our YouTube visitors. Yeah. But Evan has just drawn the internal circle, and he's going to put a word inside of it.
Noticing.
I don't know what word he's going to
put. I wanted you to say it, Evan. So.
Yeah, noticing.
Noticing. He's going to put noticing in the middle of it.
Yeah.
There is, technically, there's a couple of other words we can put
yeah,
in. We like noticing that. Is the most common.
Yeah.
The verb noticing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I find it helpful to have people ask themselves, again, the functional question. You know, is all this stuff that you're paying attention to, because I look at that circle as our ability to pay attention to something.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'll say the way that you're paying attention to it, treating it as true and valid and important, is, has that been helpful to you?
Hmm.
And, you know, it's a different question. It's a different perspective. Because people usually want to go in the direction, well, is it true?
Right. Yep. Is it true? Is it real? Was it valid?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so they'll literally bring in, you know, their MRI.
Oh, yeah. They'll show you the data, right?
Yeah. And what Evan is referring to is the difference between that and then the workability question.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all well and good, but is it working for you?
Right. 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 And you know, before I introduce a technique like diffusion, which is a helpful strategy, I really want them to, you know, recognize that the whole point of learning to distance yourself from all that stuff that's showing up there is that it's just simply not helpful. The more they focus on it as true and valid and important and a commentary on, you know, their existence and who they're going to be, you know, the more stuck they are. Mm-hmm. And if they can stand back from that and recognize that the brain is a language producing machine.
It's good at that.
Produces words.
Yep. The word generator.
Word generator.
You know, wake up in the middle of the night and there's words.
Yep.
Words.
That happens to me all the time.
Right. And then, you know, I can, you know, throw in that little triangle again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, hey, you know, your word machine links words. This word's related to that word, and this is what it means. And your brain wants to, number one, explain things. Number two, it wants to protect you. Unfortunately, the way that our brain explains things and protects us isn't necessarily helpful.
No.
Not working.
It's not, no.
Right. So that...
Something called randomness.
Yeah.
The brain is pretty random in what gets connected to what.
Arbitrary, right?
It's arbitrary. That's right. The other word for that.
Right. Yeah, and then if you can begin to recognize that the story that it's creating is just one of a thousand different combinations of facts,
mm-hmm,
that the brain could come up with. And literally, I'll have a person take three what they consider significant facts from their past history. And, you know, if they're, you know, a person that really enjoys writing and talking, I'll say, hey, take those three facts, this happened, that happened, and another thing happened, and take those three facts and write three different stories about those facts. that have three different, totally different outcomes. And that will, again, once they do that, they'll come back and say, you know, my brain can come up with any combination of, you know, storylines based on, you know, this information about my life. What makes any of them true? And I said, well, I don't know. What do you think? And so they begin to see that maybe the story that they've been buying into about their stuckness in life isn't helpful to them.
Yeah.
And that, you know, begins a powerful shift.
Right.
Yes. You're reminding me of relational frame theory, Evan.
Okay.
Do you study that a lot?
Some. Not as much as I would like to, but enough.
You don't have to. You're already doing it, so don't worry about it.
No, you're in it.
If you're already riding a bike, don't worry about going and learning about riding a bike. But
then you get wobbly on the bike.
A set of words that some humans came up with to talk about human language is a theory of language and thinking called cognition, which is called relational frame theory. Well, you're here, Evan, talking a lot about relating things, relating three dots to a triangle. Mm-hmm. That's relating. And so there's a whole big, very complicated theory. However, you can simplify it and make it sort of effective. And that's what he's doing. He's showing people how to play with their relations.
Yeah.
Play with how they're relating things in their mind vis-a-vis pain. And that can be very helpful that when you understand that simple stuff about relating things.
Yes. Right? Yeah. Exactly. Very
helpful. And you don't have to know the theory. You just have to know the basics. Yeah. People relate things. They relate anything to any aardvarks to, you know, armchairs. Right. There you go. Now you got aardvark stuck on armchairs.
Wow. Never had that.
You know, I love to do that kind of stuff.
I'm thinking about aardvark sitting in armchairs.
Right. Next time you see an armchair, you're going to see an aardvark sitting there, right?
Yeah.
You know, and like, well, where'd that come up with? Well, my crazy brain just came up with it. Yeah. So it's arbitrary.
Yes.
What it is. And it's arbitrary concerning pain and the story that you build around pain.
Yeah.
And so he's showing people how, wow, you can build an alternative story, your own story.
Yep.
Regarding pain.
Right.
And you don't have to buy that story. You can
No, you don't have to buy it. You can create another one.
Story with the
notes. And then we come in with workability. And once you find a story that works better for you, use that one.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And then they'll say, but is it the right story? Who cares?
Yeah.
It's working.
Not relevant.
It doesn't have to be correct or true or anything. It just needs to work to get you moving, you know, so you can do stuff that's consistent with the life that you want to be living.
Yeah.
That's what this is about. So anyway, you remind me you've internalized some relational frame theory stuff.
Yeah. It's cool. It's super helpful. And one of my favorite ways to get people thinking about the word machine is to talk about AM radio talk shows.
AM radio talk shows.
Yeah. So
one of our favorites.
Yeah, so I'll say you're driving across country, it's late at night.
Yeah.
Looking for some entertainment and you come across a late night talk show on an AM radio station.
Yeah, it's always entertaining late at night to turn off the FM and go over to AM. Yeah,
right. Definitely. Right. And I'll say they're talking about something from some very bizarre perspective. And you don't say to yourself as you listen to that, wow, I guess, you know, this is a nationally syndicated program and on the radio, I guess it must be true.
Yeah.
You know, and people will laugh, you know, they'll go like, oh, I can't stand that stuff. Like, well, why not look at the noise that your brain is making like an AM radio talk show?
Oh, man, that's a great metaphor. Yeah. God, that's worthy of a great big act, book of metaphors, whatever it's called. That's cool. Your brain's just a late night AM talk show.
That's the channel that your brain is tuned into.
Right. And it loves that channel.
Oh, it does.
Well, but you don't have to buy it.
Nope.
You can listen to it. It's going to be there. It's not going to go away.
Yeah.
Right.
We're not saying you're going to get rid of it, but you don't have to buy it.
You can have it.
Right. So from that lower left-hand corner of the matrix and bringing...
That's the yucky stuff.
The yucky stuff and bringing in noticing, then it's time that I help them start paying attention to how they actually move away from what's important to them and away from their discomfort. And they actually don't realize, most people don't realize, that moving away from discomfort is the same as moving away from what's important to them.
You mean it takes time away?
It takes time away and energy away.
Yeah. Right. And what he's saying is that, you know, it's the opportunity cost. Once you start devoting time to moving away from your pain, that time is now stolen away from how you might move toward who and what's important to you.
Yeah, right.
That's always the problem. One of the things we'll do, and you may do this too, is we'll do time sharing.
Uh-huh.
We'll say, well, about how much time do you think you're spending over here on the left side of the matrix?
Mm-hmm.
Versus how much time out of a 24-hour day do you think you're spending over here on the right side? Well, people in pain clinics, substance abuse clinics and other stuff like that, they will make some really dire estimates, like 16 on the left, 8 on the right, or 20 on the left, and 4 on the right. That's really out of whack. Well, if you're spending all that time over there, you're certainly not spending a whole lot of time playing with your grandkids or whatever. Right. That's what he's referring to.
Yeah, exactly.
So the moving away from yucky stuff.
I'm taken away from who
and what. Becomes a dominant force in your life.
Yeah. And so similar to values in that discussion and how that goes, I find that people will also struggle really seeing that the things that they're doing so automatically on basically on autopilot
Yeah.
are actually away moves.
Yeah.
And the back in the you were on yesterday, you've met Paul Rock. Right. They oftentimes talk about autopilot for the substance abuse population. Same thing. And then right in the middle of the matrix, they'll put two vertical lines that are like hitting pause.
Uh-huh.
And so instead of being on auto, they hit pause.
Pause button.
Yeah. Nice little, another little metaphor for you.
And you stand back and you look.
Right. Stand back, pause, and stand back and look.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so I use the, acrostic dots, D for distraction, O for opting out, T for talking and thinking, and S for substances and self-harm, self-soothing.
Well, this is all, this sounds like left side stuff.
Well, yeah, for the awareness.
Upper left.
Yeah. Upper left.
Mm-hmm. You're aware of that upper left stuff. Okay, I got you.
Yeah, yeah. So people, have a hard time making that connection that, well, doing those things, aren't those good? And then I reframe that question with, it's not whether or not it's good or it's bad, it's what is it doing?
Right. What's the outcome? Right.
Right. You know, so if you are distracting yourself with Netflix, cleaning your house, reading, 5 novels a week, are you getting closer to where you want to go? Or is that a very powerful strategy to distance yourself from what's uncomfortable? And so, so one of the things that really is tricky for people is they look at the talking and thinking one and they say, well, shouldn't I be analyzing my problem?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I get that a lot.
Yeah,
I get that a lot. All right.
And they we'd be doing a deep dive into this right now, right?
Right.
And at the bottom of that analysis is it's Phil's thing. You will reach a constant state of ecstatic wonder.
Finally, reach it once you've done the analysis.
Right. I'm kidding, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, but people have had a financial investment in that.
Oh. Absolutely. Oh,
very much so.
They've talked to experts. They have, consulted at the best clinics.
Yep.
They've read journal articles. Some people, they're very knowledgeable.
They're doing their due diligence.
Oh, very much so. Oh, yeah.
Right.
And it's a bottomless pit of analysis.
Yeah.
Right. And then I'll bring in a little piece of wisdom from Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll say, sometimes our talking and thinking is a little bit like a rocking chair. We have this feeling when we're in a rocking chair that we're doing.
We're going somewhere. I love it.
Yeah.
And so you have to ask yourself, has something changed because of all your analysis?
Yeah.
Or is your analysis something that gives you this false sense of activity
that you're doing something.
I'm doing something, right?
Mm-hmm. While you're just sitting there,
right? Yeah,
great how they just reinforce each other, isn't it?
Yeah, that at the end of the day, nothing really has changed.
Right.
So the phrase that's used in Alcoholics Anonymous is paralysis of analysis.
Yep, I knew that was coming.
Yeah,
I heard it. I've hung around that crowd too.
Yeah, yeah, it's helpful. Joe knows why he drinks.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when I finally get to the reason, my problems will be solved.
Right, right. Yeah, and so that's a trap.
It's very much a trap. We all get it into lesser degrees. Right.
And the other trap that's a sticking point for some people is substances. Mm-hmm. Because they have been told very convincingly, often by healthcare professionals, that they need that medication. And that medication is, the only thing that can manage their pain. And then I'll just ask the workability question. How's it been going? Are you better off or are you more dependent?
Right. And so you're in a position, I'm not saying take drugs or not take drugs. I'm just having you ask the question, is it working to get you where you want to go?
Right. Right. And so our program is uniquely designed, with physicians who are trained to look at, the effectiveness of medications and the interactions between medications. Unfortunately, many people are coming with, anywhere from a dozen to two dozen medications, that have very, very serious counterindications for you.
Yes.
Exactly. And every one of them has a side effect. So you got side effects stacked on top of side effects.
They're all walking experiments, right?
Right.
Right. Right.
Or not walking experiments.
Yeah, they're not walking. Yeah, exactly. So, that piece is addressed by, the entire team, and we're all, suggesting, that what you have been doing hasn't worked, and that's why you're here, and going in a different direction is an experiment worth taking. And some people literally just have to take us on faith that what we're saying might be helpful to them.
Yeah.
And we do present it as an experiment. Let's just see. If moving in this direction is helpful.
Yep.
And
there you go.
Yeah.
So the exciting piece, is of course that last quadrant of the matrix, which is what can I do?
Yep.
And this gets right back to the fear of movement.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I
automatically go that, this is the case of learning how to take it with you.
Yeah.
Yes. Right. That's it, Kevin.
This is the backpack metaphor or many other metaphors.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So, what I write down right underneath the second quadrant, what's getting in my way. What I write down is the phrase, or the statement, I will move forward once I get rid of this.
Yeah, that's
there you go.
That's the bill of goods. We're all sold,
that's a,
right?
That's a great
right.
trap.
Yep.
Right. There is the trap. Yep. So as long as we hang on to that, we're not going to move forward.
Nope.
But if we can say, oh, actually, that's not a helpful statement. So the backpack, you could use that, as you mentioned, Kevin. Another one that I use is a wagon.
Wagons are good.
Balloons
are pretty good when they get later on, helium balloons with your pain or your fear. They get lighter. The more you work with it, the lighter they get. That's that metaphor.
Oh, that's good. That is good. So I'll just say, hey, why don't you throw that fear and discouragement and that anger, that frustration, that disappointment.
That wagon. Your little red, what a radio flyer, right?
There you go.
Exactly. Throw it into the wagon and picture yourself just dragging it along with you as you call up that friend that you haven't talked to in a long year. What would that be like? And, if that's a toward move for them, if that's something that would really be connecting them with values that are important to them, they'll say, well, I probably could call my friend, even if I've got this thing going on.
Well, you say, what might you notice?
Yeah.
And they say, well, I might notice I'm in pain. There you go. Yeah. What else might you notice? I might notice I'm talking to my friend.
There might you notice go. My friend.
You can notice the pain and notice talking to your friend all at the same time.
Yeah.
And then your brain will go, oh, wow, I can do that.
Yeah.
That's entirely possible.
Yeah. Right. Right. And so I like mentioning to people that the noticing circle is similar to a platform.
Oh, yeah. That's a nice one. Right. Get up there. Get up on that bandmaster's platform up above everything.
Yep. Right. Yeah. And start looking around. See what you notice.
Yep.
And from that perspective, you don't have to fix stuff. But you can actually see where you want to go.
Yeah, we used to do a big metaphor, the press box view.
Yes.
Okay. So you're up, your sports analogy, but you're up in the press box, seeing everything moving around.
Yeah.
And you're a detached sports reporter.
Yes.
You don't have any, you don't favor either team. Yeah,
you're just reporting.
You're just reporting on what happens.
Well, that's good.
Right.
So, that is good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so as people start to re-engage in what's important to them, it is different for different people, but what generally happens is they take small risks.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. There's your experiments. There's your little.
Yeah. Yep. And usually people have as a value that they really want to live out, and I reinforce a little bit is the value of courage. People want to be courageous. People want to do what is good.
Now you're connecting it to the hero's quest, the hero's journey.
Right. And as a person taps into that, they start expanding, the number of ways that they can move toward what's important.
Yeah.
It might be something as simple as, getting out their easel and paints and, painting again.
Yeah.
Reading something that really stimulates their mind.
Yep.
Calling a friend.
Yeah. And they can notice how that feels when they do that.
Right.
As opposed to how it feels to be over there.
In a loop, pain stuck loop.
Right.
Cool. This is very cool.
Yeah.
And I will tell folks that Evan his program is not the only pain program using the ACT Matrix. It's ACT and then also the ACT Matrix has become popular because for chronic pain, the end point is you learn how to take the pain with you.
Yes.
And that's just the nature of it. So it's cool, but it you get people there slowly. They're coming out of a system, as Evan noted, that many professionals basically saying, well, somehow, some way, we'll get rid of this pain.
Yeah. Right.
And yeah. But some people, that's not the case.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
And crossing over and accepting that is a, that can be a difficult thing, but Evan's helping them out.
Yeah, you're bringing them along very nicely.
Bringing them along very nicely and gently. We all like nice and gentle.
Yes.
That's cool. Well, very cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the Art of Being. And that is, I mean, this is right on the Art of Being.
Yes.
He's working with people so that they develop that art of being that's sort of been stolen from them by pain.
Yeah.
And the now mystery. They can get back to that art of being. And but now it's the art of being with pain.
Right.
And the ACT Matrix is helping along. We all do our art of being, but yes. this is cases where the ACT Matrix might help. So yeah. Thanks so much for coming on, and you'll have to come back and give us more updates.
I will. Glad to.
Excuse me. Both Phil and I are coughing.
Yeah, got a little cold here. Sorry.
I think I just got dry air. We're all, especially Evan and I, we're way up in the north, so.
Yeah.
Really dry air inside of where we are. Phil, you sound like you're getting a cold.
I'm getting over it, Kevin.
Oh, you're getting over the cold.
In the last throes here.
Well, you can, if you don't get over it, go see Evan.
There you go.
Teach you how to be with
Well, he's already helped me, you know. Take my cold pain with me.
Okay, well, I'm going to sign off. Everybody sign off. You guys don't have to. I'm just going to stop the recording and join us for another episode soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
And sign up for a certification.
Thank you.
Helps us out.